Welcome to the Dimensions book series by Kay Arwen. An extraordinary tale of an inner journey and a battle of good against evil. In this podcast, the heroine Kaya tells her own story from book one, The Awakening. Our journey begins on the Scottish Isle of Skye. Parallel realities interconnect and interweave. Step in and enter Dimensions.
Hi, Kaya here. If you remember, I left my partner after, 2 years. 2 years of should have having to have left him. I finally plucked up the courage after he sort of, kind of got possessed by this strange noise that I heard coming from his phone. And I've heard it a few times since in other people's phones. Anyway, I've been sitting here, I'm on my way up to the Isle of Skye in Scotland and in my camper van, and I've just been I pulled up and I've just been writing in my journal. I guess trying to get my head round why I ended up in a relationship for 2 years, knowing full well I should have left after 2 weeks. Anyway, I've been writing and journaling about shame. Shame's quite crippling, don't you think? And I think it's perhaps one of the deepest barriers to experiencing connections with other people. I know for myself, shame, it kind of made me isolate myself. I sort of wanted and craved a loving relationship, but fear of being hurt or being let down, it keeps me sort of locked in isolation. And makes me self-sabotage. And I wonder if that's why, reflecting on it, if I ended up in the situation that I did with Rick, my ex-partner. The thing is, if you self-sabotage, you sort of think there's something wrong with you, that you're flawed. And, it just makes you feel disconnected. One of my own shame cycles was embarrassment for how I look. I mean, I remember being as a teenager, I was a tall, sort of skinny girl, and I was still wearing vests when all the other girls in my class had got bras and, boys, quite frankly. And I was really shy and self-conscious. And I remember I would feel a freak. All the other girls would come to school with the latest hairstyles and makeup, and they were so confident in talking to the boys in our class. I remember one day when the school bell went for home time. We were all kind of running through the school hall, which wasn't supposed to be allowed. We were running to get to the bus before it left. And a group of older lads from year six, they were hackling me from behind, saying about my legs and because my legs are quite long. Anyway, they ran past me and then they turned and stopped and looked, and I remember I can see their faces now. "Oh, don't bother. We shouldn't have bothered," they said, and they ran off laughing. Yeah, some joke. Might have felt really funny to them, but I remember just wanting to shrink up and hide. Something inside of me kind of tore apart. I was so embarrassed and I felt so ashamed. And I think, thinking about it, that shame for my appearance added to a lack of self-worth and open the way up to allow other people to abuse me. Because I was so grateful if someone so much as smiled at me after that. It's strange, really, because 5 years later afterwards, I became a model. I was tall and slender. Note, slender now, not skinny. And I was suited for the catwalk. Did I believe it, however? Did that hurt inner me actually accept it? No, absolutely not. I still felt awkward and apologetic for how I looked, and hence modelling became a battle of self-preservation, because I attracted experiences with my energy programme of abuse. I attracted experiences where I was treated with a lack of respect. A lump of flesh rather than a woman. And it wasn't until I did the self-inventory and started to open up and examine my inner self-worth and self-imposed beliefs and perceptions, did I truly start to stand in my own power and feel beautiful. Not perfect, but beautiful and at peace within my body, honouring it for what it does and where it takes me in life. Yet, here I still am, sitting in my van, writing in my journal. Not exactly in a loving relationship yet. Not like the people that I've been reading about for my past life article. Anyways, I look up from my journal across to where my two dogs are rolling in the sand by the water's edge. I've stopped by a loch under the trees. It's a lovely spot. Anyway, animals are so self-accepting, aren't they? They don't have a problem with what they look like, and they don't try and be something different on something that they're not. One of my dogs is looking at the ducks on the water and tearing along the riverbank or the loch bank. She's a bit naughty, really. And the other dog, well, she's noticed that I'm watching, psychic or what, and she's trotting back over to the van as if to say, "Are you coming to play?" "I'll be right with you," I say, and I pat the dog on the head as she sticks her nose up through the van door. I just continue and finish writing this last piece in my journal. "It's a misconception to think that anyone is perfect," I write. "We're not perfect. We're perfect in our imperfections." It's a beautiful to be empathetic, and there's a sort of a courage in being sensitive and vulnerable. And these qualities are so feminine, aren't they? But it can be scary to let your barriers down and show the world who you really are. Funny, how often do people say to you, "How are you?" And you go, "I'm fine," when actually you're in a rage, or you're having a really bad day and are on the verge of tears, or you haven't slept for a week because you're stressed about a deadline for the magazine, in my case. And in truth, you're not fine at all, far from it. So in effect, you're lying. And the brush-off response, because that's what it is, well, it doesn't exactly open the avenue for you to build a close connection, a close relationship. I mean, clearly there are people within your life you're not prepared to reveal your entire self to. I mean, I wouldn't with Lena, my editor, for example. She'd rip me to shreds. But if it's a case of opening up to someone you can trust, then surely, if the question is, "How are you?" you could say, "Actually, I'm not so great. I've got a lot on my mind at the moment, but thanks for asking." I mean, there are a zillion ways that you could potentially speak your truth and honour and strengthen the connection with yourself, because you're being true to how you really feel, rather than shutting yourself down and judging yourself and pushing your feelings to one side like some denial. It's just food for thought. I just think that the more you can honour and trust and be open with your feelings and strengthen that relationship you've got with yourself, then, well, surely that's empowering. And then if you're empowered, then maybe potentially you can attract a relationship that honours that and holds the space for you to be whole. All my life I've been craving for a partner who's my best friend and my lover, a soulmate. And you know what? Despite my history with Rick and all the other bad experiences, I haven't given up on my dream. I guess I'll just have to be patient and trust the flow. Anyway, the dogs are still out there, one running around after the ducks and the other one looking at me as if she's getting more impatient. You know that bear Paddington? Well, her face looks like that. It gives you a hard stare. So I leave my van and walk down to the water's edge. It's really strange. I really feel this pull towards the water. I mean, the loch just is there in front of me, a huge expanse of water gently rippling, almost like the sea would. And on the far shore, I can just see more pine trees. And there's this sense of total peace and serenity. There's no one around. I might as well. I take off my clothes and step into the water. It's freezing, but somehow it doesn't bother me as much as I thought it would. I strike out across the water. I'm not a brilliant swimmer. Well, not fast, but I can certainly swim a good breaststroke and, well, the depth doesn't bother me. I just swim and swim, and then something possesses me. I just take a deep breath and I dive down as deep as I can go. It's strange, I was expecting my vision to be blurred, yet when I open my eyes, I can see clearly through the water as though I'm wearing goggles. That's really odd. I surface and shake my head and then thinking, well, maybe I imagined it, and I take another deep breath and I dive again. But no, it's exactly the same. Around me, I can clearly see the rocks and the plants and the fish. It's amazing. It's like the whole world underwater has literally opened up before my eyes. It's really crazy. It feels like I belong. Goodness knows how long I've been spending out here swimming and looking and exploring all the different textures and colours I can see under the water. But all of a sudden, the cold seems to hit me. I leave the loch and get dressed, shaking and shivering. But I feel different. I feel as though something inside me has shifted. Something melted away. Perhaps it's because of what I was writing about in my journal before I got into the water. Maybe a block's been removed, or maybe I've expanded in some way. I call my two dogs and walk back to the van, opening the side door. And the dogs leap in and lay down. And I walk round to the driver's door, ready to take that last leg and get up to the Isle of Skye. As I do, something catches my eye close to the water's edge. Something looks different. One area near some trees that are almost touching the edge of the water, it's kind of gone, well, ripply, like a mirage. As though the surface of the water and the rippling effect of the water has extended up into the air above it. Really weird. I walk down to investigate, and as I get closer, I half expect it to disappear, but it doesn't. Feels kind of electrically staticky, kind of a feeling. Anyway, I reach out with my hand, my fingertips extended, and strangely enough, as I do, my hand disappears before my eyes. What the? I pull my hand back quickly and I'm kind of quite relieved to see that it's still attached to my body. And I reach out again. And once again, my hand disappears as though it's travelling through energy. It's really curious. I feel a bit like Alice in Wonderland. But I take a deep breath and holding my breath, I step through. I feel dizzy, as though the world's spinning around me, and my body feels like it's been stretched out to breaking point and then squeezed back together. But the sensation stops as quickly as it started. Only now I'm not by the loch anymore. I'm in a desert. I stand for a moment, my brain trying to comprehend what it's seeing. But it has to be real. I have to be here. I can feel the sun scorching my skin, and I can feel the texture of the sand beneath my feet. I stoop down and pick up the sand between my fingers and feel and watch it run through them like water. Well, that's real enough. Well, the sand is around me in all directions, and the sand dunes even to the left of me. It does look like a desert, but is it on Earth? There's an explosion in the sky, and as I watch, there's a flare of light and an enormous cylindrical airship-looking type thing bursts into flames and begins to fall rapidly towards the ground. It's eerie, though, because as I watch, it seems to fall in slow motion, as though I'm watching it in a detached, separate kind of a way. I'm too surprised to feel anything but curiosity, and my head is throwing up a million questions, but all I seem to come up with is a blank. And I'm watching everything unfold around me as though I'm watching a film. This airship type thing dives into the sand and becomes partially buried. I'm sure it's not made on Earth. I mean, the hull of it has got no sign of being riveted together. But whereas it did look like it was seamless, like a cigar-shaped cylinder, formed from a blue-coloured metal, now, as it hits the floor, the front end completely breaks off. There's a creaking groan that sends shudders through my body. And as I watch, gazing up from the hole that's left is a being. It looks to be about 7 feet tall, and it's got light skin, and it's wearing some sort of medieval-looking armour type thing made of leather. But that somehow doesn't shock me. What shocks me more is that this being not only seems to see me, but also know me. Run! Kaya, run! A voice echoes in my head. Run! They will find us. You must not be seen. I'm stunned and I look around. There's a sound of vehicles approaching. I need a place to hide. I can feel the urgency of the being's warning. There's not many options in the barren desert, but I manage to squeeze in between some obliging rocks so that I can observe what's going on without being seen. The vehicles scream up to the fallen vessel and official-looking men get out. They're definitely human. Army, maybe? But they don't seem to have any conventional uniform that I recognise. But they must be military. Besides, the vehicles that they've arrived in, they're definitely military vehicles. And who else but military would know about the vessel's plight so quickly? They had to have been observing it beforehand. Anyway, as I watch, the men get out of the vehicles and begin to follow orders. To my horror, they drag the being from the fallen craft with no empathy whatsoever and then proceed to shoot it. They've encountered these beings before. They're not surprised by it at all. Not only do they seem to have no surprise, they seem to have no regret. They're so matter of fact, as though the being had no significance. What they appear to be interested in is something inside the actual vessel. There's one man. He seems to be the leader. He's got thick-set dark hair, and he seems to be a good few inches taller than the rest. What I can hear one of the men call him Grisilior? Well, he starts to bark orders. Find the crystal. It'll be in the central chamber. Don't come out without it. Well, he doesn't seem to have any humanness. Anyway, the other men obey his command and they clamber into the vessel. And it's not long before one of them comes back with, well, what looks like a purple shard of some kind of crystal. The leader, if that's who he is, Grisilior, well, he takes this rock and holds it to the sky. And as he does, well, the light catches it. And it seems to turn into like a purple, like fire. And from my hiding place, I can feel the energy from it, like it's pulling me, calling me. It's weird. It's like a strange magnetism. And I find myself wanting just to stand up and move towards it. I cling onto the rocks of my hiding place, consciously resisting the temptation to move towards the rock. But the strange thing is, Grisilior, he seems to feel my presence and he turns in my direction and stares. He can see me. Panic floods through my body as he steps nearer. Focus on my breathing, focus on my breathing. Calm, just calm down. I focus on the sky above me and the golden sand beneath my feet, and something tells me just to disconnect from the approaching man, if that's what he is, and just breathe. It seems to work. I open my eyes and Grisilior's stopped in his tracks. He doesn't seem to be able to sense me anymore. I focus on keeping my mind calm and watch as the other men return to their vehicles and drive away, taking the body of the alien being with them. I wait for them all to disappear, and then I stand shakily, really, and walk back towards the mirage-like energy, and I step back through. It's then that the realization of what I've just seen hits me, and I start to tremble and shake and collapse onto the loch shore in a cold sweat. What on earth did all that mean? I take a few deep breaths and then, standing, make my way back to the van. The drive will have to wait. I'm in no state to drive now. And I open the rear of the van and, reaching for my camp stove, set some water on to boil. Need a strong coffee. What on earth is going on? First there's the noise from the phones, and now this. And have I just stepped through some sort of energy doorway? My mind spins as it tries to understand what's just happened. The water begins to boil, and I make my coffee and I sit sipping it for a while. And then I need to talk to somebody. And so I'll pick up my phone and I dial the number for the office. Luckily, I get Bella. Hi, Kaya, Bella says, recognising my number. Lena's in a meeting at the moment. If you want to call back at 10, or I can take a message and get her to call you. No, it's okay, I reply. I wanted a quick word with you. I tell her briefly what's just happened. What do you make of that? I ask. Were you asleep? Bella replies, sounding somewhat sceptical. Sounds like you were dreaming. Perhaps you went into some kind of trance, brought about by the cold of the water. I don't know, Kaya. I mean, aliens crashing out of the sky and being shot. It's, well, I hate to say it, but it's a bit far-fetched. Well, I reply, past life is real, so why not alien beings? Although I can feel my energies slumping at Bella's disbelief. It's just, something's wrong, Bella. I don't know how it all fits together, but something's really wrong and I can feel it. Well, it's not like you to be delusional, I admit. So, say that you did see something. What do you suppose it was? Bella asks. I've no idea. I can picture the look on her face. Bella's voice suddenly changes. I've got to go, Kaya. Call you back later. And she rings off. Lena must have come back into the office. I finish my coffee and pack away the stove and get into the driving seat of my van. I might not have any answers, but speaking to Bella, well, it's helped clear my head. At least now I feel I can focus on driving without falling apart. I pull into the lane and returning to the main road, I set off towards the Isle of Skye. Go to the underground base. In the subterranean underground base, Regardless watched as the last pieces of the wreckage were put into place. Can any of that really be of use? He said, addressing the skinwalker next to him. Agaricus didn't turn his head. No, none of it. We've got all the systems that we need, but the humans won't accept that. They'll spend the next few weeks, months maybe, dismantling every aspect of the craft and then come to exactly the same conclusion. Regalis nodded. I thought so. And they dare to call us parasites. Look at them, scurrying over a piece of junk like vermin. They haven't even got the knowledge to design and create a spacecraft without reverse engineering another being's ship. And yet they truly believe that they're the most intelligent life form on Earth. In the universe, Agaricus corrected. Oh yes, I forgot. In the universe. Well, they're in for a shock. Soon they'll know that they're not alone and are far from being the most intelligent life form. Regalis glanced at Agaricus. That's not the case. They'll fall, but they won't realise what's happened. We'll have dominion before they even know we exist, save for a few. And they'll be those that are of use to the Matrix Lord, like these idiots here. And once he's finished with them, well. Yet, not all are susceptible to our virus, are they? Spores can only grow in the right environment. The host has to be dark and negative. The device that the Matrix Lord has created will spread the spores and is hypnotizing humans, but still, not all of them are receptive. The Matrix Lord has accounted for that, Regalis replied. He's destroying the ley lines. Agaricus turned to face him. Now that could work. A human approached them. Grisilior has arrived at the monolith's entrance, sir. He's got delivery of the craft and the crystal, he reported. Very well. The man walked away, and Regalis began to walk across the hangar to the far section that served as a lift to the desert above. Another ship. How many do they need? He muttered. Grisilior is only following orders, Agaricus replied. Yes, aren't we all? At least, until we have access to the other dimensions, Regardless replied. They entered the lift section of the hangar and stood next to an anti-gravity vehicle that was going above to transport the sections of the spacecraft into the hangar. The wall slid shut, there was a judder, and the floor began to rise slowly upwards. It continued past the three floors of the base, and then the wall opened to reveal a second doorway that opened out to the exterior of the monolith. Regardless tapped the code onto a panel next to this door, and it slid open. Immediately, they were blinded by the brightness of the sun. Agaricus cursed and placed the sunglasses on his face. They may not be molds anymore, and as such, they were less susceptible to the sun. But skinwalkers would much prefer to be in dark and cold places. Outside the monolith, the desert was a hive of activity. Regardless and Agaricus walked across to where Gracilior was ordering humans to offload pieces of spacecraft from the back of trucks and get them transported into the base. "Gracilior, you have the crystal?" Regardless asked. Gracilior turned to face him, towering above his fellow skinwalker. As a mould, he'd been a tiny man, but he'd soon shifted skins and found one he felt that was much more overbearing and intimidating. Regardless had to admit, it certainly had an effect on the humans who were currently scurrying around, obeying every word that Gracilior said. "Yes, we've got it. And this, all this is really necessary?" Regardless asked, indicating the sections of the cigar-shaped spaceship. "Probably not," Gracilior replied, "but it'll keep them busy." He waved his arm at a human who was approaching. "Just take that section first. The anti-gravity vehicle will easily take it." "Humans," he muttered as the man walked away. "And they're supposed to be intelligent?" Agaricus interjected. Gracilior agreed with a nod. "There was something else at the site," he said. "Or rather, someone else. A human." "On the ship?" Regardless asked. "No, hiding in the rocks," came the reply. "I didn't waste any time investigating. I didn't need to. I had the Cube Collective device in my Jeep, and I logged the human's energy signature. Then I'll trace it. And I'll find out more," Regardless replied. "I'm sure the Matrix Lord will want to know who's been sniffing around his operations."
I look forward to seeing you at the next episode of my story from Dimensions: The Awakening. And if you'd like to follow Kaya's blog, it's karwin.co.uk. And for more information on the author, check out kayamia.co.uk or centeredresonance.com. Until next time, I leave you all now with some Atlantean light language.